You're listening to the Wonders Podcast, episode 17. Matthias Ruigrok is a musician, historian, and culture buff from the Netherlands who happens to have a soft spot for Romania. His particular interest in this Eastern European country was already budding during his time at the University of Utrecht back in 2010. So much so that he decided to round up his student years with a master's in European studies at the University of Amsterdam, focusing on learning as much as he could about the Romanian language and culture. His master thesis crowned his academic pursuits, Matthias dedicating his dissertation to exploring the roots and evolution, especially during the communist years, of Romania's current national anthem, Deșteaptă-te Române, which is the hot topic of today's episode for the National Day of Romania. Get ready to take a crash course in the history of the Romanian national anthem and discover aspects about this beautiful song that might not have crossed your mind with Matthias on this very special Wonders episode. La mulți ani, România, and enjoy the show. Hello, Matthias. Welcome on the podcast.
Hi, Daniela. Glad to be here.
Perfect. Today, we will be focusing on an important and weighty topic, actually, for the Romanian people especially. We're going to be talking a lot about the national anthem of Romania. And Matthias, you had the chance to dive deeper, probably deeper than most Romanians have, into the ins and outs of the current national anthem that people have through the research that you did for your master thesis at the University of Amsterdam. And in fact, from what I read from your thesis, your curiosity for the Romanian people started a bit earlier from your study time at the University of Utrecht in the Netherlands. So that was about in 2010. And how did you get to this point? How did this inclination towards the eastern side of Europe start in your life?
Well, it's not really easy to pinpoint where exactly that started. But I usually tend to think that considering historical studies in Western Europe, usually it's focused on Western European history, and it's a big part of the curriculum. And then there's world history, like everything else, but everything, really everything. I've always found it curious. I've been curious about this. Neighbors, so to speak, Eastern Europe, and we never learned a lot about it. We just knew, like, okay, well, that's former communist countries and stuff like that. And diving deeper into history, there's not much known about it. So I think I've been attracted to this, because it was a bit of a black hole. Like, what's there? There must be some history there. And why has never? Why don't we learn anything about it? No, well, let's find out by myself. But to be frank, I've felt the pull of Eastern Europe, I guess, or just other countries in general. From way before that, and then certain countries pick my specific interest, and why Romania is one of those, I don't know for sure, but I do remember stumbling somewhere upon the language, which was on a random music album. It was a metal album, so it was about Dracula, of course.
Of course,
but at least they included some spoken Romanian, and I was kind of going, well, hey, this sounds very different from what I thought it would sound. So there's small sparks, you might say, here and there, scattered throughout my personal history, and all of us, in some way it just came together, especially when starting studying history, and ended everything I told you before, like, hey, why don't we learn anything about this region? I cannot really pinpoint it, but
it was more like gathering the breadcrumbs that were left around and going to the evil witch
that you needed to burn in an oven?
I guess it's more like everything that's... I'm more interested in the things that not everyone knows.
I can't imagine that Romania could fall on the list of places that are not underdeveloped, because that is a bit too much of playing in the myth, but underexplored. There you go.
Yeah, underexplored, especially for a Western perspective, that is. I mean, we can say that without sounding too snobbish or whatever.
No, but I think there is a certain reciprocity in the process. In the end, yes, Romanians know of the West, but what do they actually know from, for example, the history of the Netherlands? I don't think that there is much to say there either. So it's very interesting that you wanted to bridge the divide and get closer to parts of the world that... Yeah, there are just myths that are around. For example, Dracula is obviously a preeminent one because of all the Hollywood-ish kind of influence. And of course, now it's picking up because more people are going to these kind of places and they're talking more about it. And interestingly enough, I think maybe an important opportunity that you had was to study at the University of Amsterdam as well, where there is a department that focuses on Romanian studies.
Yeah, certainly. I was very lucky to have that. I don't know if it's still around, actually.
I think not. Romanian studies. I have a feeling it closed a few years ago. I think I heard something around that.
Yeah, I think it even closed by the time I did my master's at Amsterdam, and the time that I studied Romanian at Amsterdam, it was part of my bachelor's. Yeah, in another city, but hey, here in the Netherlands, everything is pretty close to each other anyway, so it's not a big deal. No, but I was really lucky to stumble upon that. I actually just because I've studied there for a year, and the biggest part of that time we were just two students, so it was not like a very big faculty anyway. But I was just lucky to have that chance to pick it up there, and then from there, start my own journey by picking up some summer schools by the Romanian Culture Institute and stuff like that, and from there on, develop it on my own.
Speaking of which, you ended up writing about the Romanian national anthem, the current one, and I'd be curious to start off the conversation, like getting deeper into the conversation by asking, how did this very specific topic come on your list?
Well, it's again this darkness surrounding a certain area, I guess. Yeah, this might be a common theme with me, I don't know. But indeed, it's, the communist era in Romania. And I was initially just interested in how would people kind of lift the very dark times like that. This is again a perspective thing. We tend to, at least when I say we, I mean when we generally speak. In the West, or students of history, I could say, when we think of communist regimes, we know it's they control everything and people just, they fall in the grid and they do whatever they are pushed to do. But obviously, on ground level, it's not like that.
Yeah, life doesn't happen exactly like
that. No, exactly. It's easy to look at it like a structured way like that, but it's not the way things go. And how would people, for instance, try to get out of that mold with music? That was my initial interest, like countercultural practices. How would people just try to fight their little fight against the government in that sense? Alongside that, I just came upon asking myself, there is this particular song, the Stadt der Ramona, that became a kind of the hymn of the revolution. But then how would people learn about that song if it's, well, if it's such a potent song? Like, the authorities wouldn't just allow that to happen, right? So it was a bit of a dark area. What has happened to this hymn in that time?
And how did it evolve throughout the years and from its origins to what it ended up being or becoming?
Well, when I started, I had actually had the idea that that it had been forbidden because that's usually what the existing academic works mentioned about it. Well, they didn't go any deeper in it because it's just a song. And I don't know, maybe that's not too interesting for many a historian, but for me it was, yeah, it's something like, hey, but this is a song and it's a nice part of history, you know, a bit of the leisure part of it, even if it's such a fight song, you could say, wake up and fight, you know. There was not so much mentioned about it. And I came from the perspective that it was prohibited during that era. And then how would people come to learn it and then to sing it as a means of protest? I mean, it's not the easiest song in the world to sing. It's not like you hear it and, oh, well, wait, right, this
catchy jingle.
It's easy. It's...
Exactly.
Yeah, so there must be some kind of history, and I was expecting maybe a more hidden history around it, like people's learning it in secret and stuff like that. So that's a very compelling perspective, isn't it?
I think it is one that has been rubbed into the public conscience because of all of the World War II movies that have been going around and talking about secret movements that have been happening during that time throughout Europe and the US and actually around the world, if you think about it. So we do tend to get that neatly packed in a box kind of image, and then we apply it to places where we don't know that many details about it. I guess that would be an explanation why that was one of your presumptions about the situation.
Yeah, exactly. And also this perception of this is a country with a secret police and everyone can report on you, like it's really strict and all this. What I told you before, this also colored my expectations, of course. At that point I didn't go into Romania, so I didn't have any clue or of anyone who lived there or
a direct experience that could help you.
Yeah, not at all. No. So this is of course a very projected image, which, well, naturally just just appears like that if you don't have the proper information.
Which is something that you took upon yourself to at least research, so at least see what is true and what is just myth in terms of the evolution of this song. And since we are discussing what Romanians would call a poofy subject, un subiect stufos, basically something that includes many points of view and a plethora of historical facts, I took it upon myself to just mention a few things to give people a bit of context about Romania's connection to its national anthems, because interestingly enough, we are one of the few countries in the world that in the last 100 something years, we've changed national anthems like people change socks.
Yeah, a lot. Yes, indeed.
And for people to understand a little bit of the historical context around this topic and why it's not so straightforward, it's not one of those stories that in which you just mentioned that the national anthem was composed by this person, written by this person, and played at this moment, and then it lived on for the next 100 years. Not at all. So I just want to give people a little bit of context. So the first ever recorded national anthem of Romania appeared in 1862 during the rule of Alexandru Ioan Cuza. And it was basically because at that time, after 1848, very important date, very important year for the song that we are talking about, for Deșteaptă-te Române. Around that time, the spirit of unity and the need of the people for their independence of their country was very strong. So Alexandru Iancuza unifying Moldova and Valachia, so the eastern and the southern part of present-day Romania, needed obviously some identity markers. And the national anthem was one of them. That was the beginning of the evolution of the idea of a national anthem in Romania. It continued in 1881 with the ascension of Carol I, so the first king of Romania. He also needed an anthem. Basically, he just took over the anthem from Alexandru Iancuza. That one didn't have lyrics, so now they just added some by the Romanian poet Vasile Alexandri and made it the Trăiască Regele, Long Live the King kind of anthem until... It was played actually until 1948, so it's one of the most longer-lived anthems that Romania has had. Of course, then we get to what I call the schizo period of Romanian national anthems. And this is something that, yeah, we're going to be talking about the communist era of Romania quite some in this interview. Yeah, basically from 1948, communists just got into the country, they took over the power, and since they wanted to erase as many traces as they could between Romania's present and its past. So as people know, the intellectual elite got either killed or basically put in prison and tortured, et cetera, et cetera. One thing that they also did was obviously tweak or, well, change completely, eradicate these identity markers, the national anthem included. So we had a song called Smashed Shackles, which that is a national anthem with obvious propagandistic aims in which people were saying like, yeah, the worker is in front. We're smashing the shackles of the Romanian people, like whatever the communists wanted to indoctrinate within the country. Interestingly enough, in 1953, so not that many years afterwards, they changed the anthem again to a more pro-Soviet song, which is called Te Slăvim România, or We Hail You Romania. But we're not really hailing her too much. We're hailing more Leninism and these kind of subversive elements that need to be connected to the people to give the people a different identity than their own. And then again, that's why I called it the schizo phase, because basically in this communist period, people have been playing around with these identity markers so much that it just became confusing. So in 1975, you have a new dictator. So what do? You have a new song as well. And interestingly enough, and I think this is an interesting point, a very important point for our discussion, the shift that happened when Ceausescu came to power, because you had the Soviet era of communism and that was very powerful in the 50s and 60s. But then in the 70s, a shift towards a more nationalistic message came through. And for example, that's why you had the Pe al nostru steag e scris unire, or Unity is written on our flag, a song that was created, the music was created by Ciprian Porumbescu, a very pro-nationalist, pro-unionist music composer, one of the most important that Romania has had. And then in 1977, Trei culori cunosc pe lume, I know three colors in the world, basically evocation of the Romanian flag. And finally, after 1989, after the Romanian Revolution, which you also mentioned in your thesis, there is a big discussion about if it was a revolution, if it was a coup d'etat, and we're not going to get into that because that was not the point of your thesis, and that's not going to be the point to debate in this discussion as well, but obviously, that was an important historical moment for Romania and in the world in general. And that's when people shifted to what we currently have as a national anthem, the Deșteaptă-te Române, Awake in Romanian. And you can already get a feeling of the very difficult relationship that Romanians have had with establishing something so important as a national anthem, an identity mark for themselves and song. So that is really interesting because your thesis and your research, your interest focuses on the last stage of the evolutionary process around the national anthem. And I want to ask, how difficult did you find the research process regarding Deșteaptă-te Române and in general, the national anthem?
Well, the national anthem, the anthems before that, I largely left out because they were not my field of interest in this. But regarding the Statuta Romana, yeah, there are a few common known facts, and every Romanian you ask, we'll just blurt them out, like, oh, well, it's everyone can tell you when it's written by whom, by Andre Murosianu, if I'm not mistaken, and it's in 1848. I don't have any notes here, so I just I just do it all from the head. So no, there are these common facts everyone just can tell you readily, but then these are mostly related to the very few points actually in history when this song was of central importance. At the time it was written, of course, when it had a message, and at those times then it was chosen to emit a certain message, and that certain message, well, that differed from time to time, you can even say. And it's those very few things you can just collect, and then what's left is an enormous void. And I had to dive right into that void. And the only way was just by doing interviews with a lot of people who have experienced, who have had their own experiences with the Statuta Romana, especially during that communist era.
What kind of interviews did you go for? Who was your main target? What kind of information were you looking to get from people? Like, did you focus more on the academic side of the discussion, or did you go for a more anthropological, sociological kind of investigation on the existence of this song throughout the population?
More the sociological side, at least that was the intent, because mainly due to the connections I had, because I did deep interviews about an hour or an hour and a half, differing between those lengths. And I had to, to collect my people, who obviously had to be, have conscious memories of the communist era. And it would be, for the sake of the research, they should be better to have different age groups as well, because as the history of the Romanian national anthems, they already shed light upon this, but a lot of things have changed during that era. Different dictators, different official ideologies, and all this affects, of course, what people, what memories they have, and also probably like what would happen to the Statuta Romana in that time. But I was dependent on the connections I've had, and I had a few connections in academia. So yeah, there is a bit of an academic backlash, you could say, that also entered it. But that's, unexpectedly, that also helped me a lot. That's it's not, but it's not so much the academic line I was looking for, because described before, it didn't really exist. There's not much written about the Statuta Romana in this era, and you could see when you talk with academics about it, they know what they know, and they place meaning upon the song beforehand in a way. They frame it. Everyone frames it, but that's why these different perspectives were very helpful to kind of remove all those veils of meaning from the song and get to the very core of it.
Of course, and that I'm imagining that would also help you place the evolution of the song better in terms of society, because as we will get a bit further in the conversation, as we will talk, we're going to mention this point, the different connections that people made, that Romanians have with the anthem, or lack thereof, which is also a current reality. But before that, I would like us to talk a little bit more about the origins of the hymn, the original idea of the song. So aside the fact that it was written by Andrei Mureșanu, which people agree on, I know that there is a debate. I don't know if it's settled at the moment. I tend to think historically, yes, but opinion-wise, not, if that makes sense. So factually, there is a consensus regarding the origins, the deeper origins of the song. But because, of course, people are people and historians are also people, or well, some historians are more people than historians. There's also ego that gets involved into certain discussions, or certain viewpoints have not been thoroughly analyzed. And then there's still a little bit of mysticism in terms of, or let's put it like that, people don't really know as much as they could factually about the origins of the song. And I would like us to go through what you know and what I know around the topic, especially giving people a better idea what the song is about and why it was important in the first place. Because then we can analyze what happened and why it became important again in a very crucial moment in Romania's destiny.
Yes, yes. Well, indeed, it came from Una Răstumnet, I think it was originally called, the poem by Mureșanu.
An echo.
An echo, yes, indeed. I didn't actually remember the translation of it. But,
but that is fascinating because, in a way, by translating it like that, the fact that this song came back like an echo, there's a lot of meaning behind it. Yes, I just thought about it spontaneously. I'm like, interesting.
There are many weird connections here and there. Anyway, from what I know, as a poem, it was written. And from what I know, and this is probably also part of the debates about it, it's generally assumed that the music was written by Anton Pan, but this the song was probably had a kind of it was a more popular song, and which is a very common thing for composers to take folk songs, folkloric songs, like take for example a Brahms or a Liszt. They took Hungarian folk songs and put them into classical music, and I assume that it has, well, kind of the same has happened with Anton Pan and the music that came to support the poem, or the other way around. I'm not too sure which one was first, but it's not a case of interest here, I think.
What I do know is that the part of the debate that sprung from Brasov, so my hometown, yeah, the original revolutionary city, as we're gonna see.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, there is a priest who also manages the first Romanian school. So the museum of the first Romanian school in Brasov. And he actually has a little booklet that he wrote about the Romanian hymn.
Yeah,
and there's a debate.
Vasile
Oltean, exactly. He's the one who wrote what he found out from an autobiography from another priest, that it was basically a church song. And in fact, talking about music, I did research the song that they were mentioning, which is La Sânul Mamei Mele, so at my mother's bosom. And it is that music. Basically, it is that music, but in a church setting. And it's exactly what you said, that people used to take whatever popular song, folk song that they had around and tweak it a little bit, give it a different meaning and adapt the stanzas and the verses that they had for that song. I mean, we have the example of the Hatikva, which is Israel's national anthem, which was actually picked up in Romania, fascinatingly enough, from a folk song. Actually, people say that there's two of them. It's either Carul cu boi, so the chariot with oxes, I think, like a very, very rough translation, which was a song popular in Iași, in the eastern side of Romania, or La Frunză de Cucuruz, Pe Frunză de Cucuruz, something like that. So with the leaf of the corn cob, because why not? It got elevated to the national anthem of Israel, the corn cob. So, and anything is possible. And in that sense, indeed, Anton Pan was collecting a lot of stories that he wrote about from the, well, collective memory of people, music that he found in different places, different villages. So that would be a very interesting point for people, well, whoever feels like they want to research, for people to study a bit more to see, okay, how did these two influences, because it all happened in 1848. Like the one says, oh, well, the first time that the Unra Sunet was sung was in Brasov in the courtyard where this priest came. Andrei Mureșanu came as well, who was a friend of this priest. And then they basically just had a moment of epiphany where they put the two things together. But then you also have this other guy who was from Vâlcea, who said Anton Pan performed the song here. And that's actually why we have the day of the national anthem on the 29th of July, because it is officially considered that that is the moment when that song was first played. Whereas, you know, history is always malleable and needs to be taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and you can imagine, like, there could be two places where this song was known. There could be more, a plethora of places where this song was already known. And, yeah, who put it together? No one knows. But these are the fringes of history, you know. And it's not really, it doesn't really tell a lot about the song itself, or and in that sense, the meaning doesn't derive from the
composer. Was it Anton Pan?
Exactly. What's more important, I think, for our discussion is the general atmosphere in which the song came about, which is of course the revolutionary year of 1848, and also the more pan-European nationalist movements that's happening everywhere. And in the wake of all these nationalist uprisings or this national spirits awakening, this poem was written, so it very much breathes that spirit. You can easily tell from the lyrics. It's like a fight song, like it calls you awaken and fight for your destiny, like that. It's very much of this nationalist spirit of the 19th century.
Quoting from your translation, the first stanza of the national anthem: "Awaken, Romanian, from the sleep of death into which you have been sunk by the barbaric tyrants. Now or never, create a new fate for yourself, to which even your cruel enemies will bow."
Yes. Yeah. It's very strong, right? But it's also really ambiguous.
How come?
It's ambiguous in the sense that it's not really... in the original poem, I think the fourth and the eighth stanzas, they kind of alluded who those barbaric tyrants were. But apart from that, well, there's barbaric tyrants everywhere. Can you tell which one they're meant here? Well, apparently not Romanians, because the Romanians are called to awake, but it could be anyone not defined as the group of Romanians like that. So it's ambiguous in the sense that it needs an enemy. And this enemy is not described in the first stanza, at least. Just later on, and very, very vaguely alluded to the Turks and the Russians, which at that time, of course, were threats. And in the case of the Ottoman Empire, Romania was still a vassal of that empire.
And in the case of the Russian Empire, they obviously wanted parts of Romania and wanted the Romanian sphere to be under their influence as well.
Indeed. But it's only a few hints to those tyrants. And then if you just leave the song as it is, especially the first strophe, it could be anyone. And in that sense, it can be used by anyone who wants to unite a people against whatever enemy, whatever tyrant. And that's where where this becomes a very interesting topic.
Especially during the communist time.
Yeah, but to illustrate this, there's just right before the communist time, from what I found, and in this sense, it was good to have academics in my interviewees as well. Apparently, during the Iron Guard period in the 40s, was a few months, actually, apparently every day on the radio, Deșteaptă-te, Română, was played. And this was the government that that collaborated with Nazi Germany, right? So in that sense, it's very clear who's the enemy. These are the minorities, Jews, the Russians, what have you. And then from what I further collected, by the end or nearing the end of the Second World War, when Romania changed sides against Nazi Germany, apparently the song was also sung. And then who are the enemies? Well, the Nazis in this sense. So it's very ambiguous, and what I and why I bring this up is because there is no like meaning in this song. It's not inherent. It's kind of meaning is bestowed upon it in a way, and the context who uses the song for its means kind of gives direction to it, and that's a very important starting point when we go into the communist era and ask ourselves now, well, what did happen to this song in this era? Because when, well, I can dive right into it. Of course, the first the first years after the war, and when finally the communists came into power, they had this very internationalist ideology. And well, a song that is calling a nationalist or a perceived nationalist
spirit,
a spirit, yes, like that. Well, there was no place for it, right? So and they were pretty intense with all their ideological means. So yeah, in those years it was banned, completely banned. And from the people I've spoken to, I didn't have any interviewees who had really conscious memories because they were too young. A few of them had lived through the 50s. In their young years, and others just remembered from their parents. Like this was a song, they kept it like maybe other nationalistic songs or other folkloric songs even. And it was a bit of a nostalgic thing, like, okay, well, it used to be like this, and now we have this this horrible communist government and things go down the drain. But we have a very few things to remember the old ways like that.
Was it sung in private by people? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, from what I've collected, and this is all, of course, anecdotal evidence, or evidence, I might not even call it like that, but it's anecdotal. That makes it interesting because, people have really different, vastly different memories about it. But there are a few people indeed remembering singing it within the context of a family, for instance, or with the older people in the village like that. But they would also denote a sense of that this song was so strictly forbidden, you couldn't sing it outside, or, you know, because probably also the wartime memories were quite strong, and there was a government that didn't want it for its nationalist meanings it had. Nationalist spirit it had, but yeah, you don't know how far they kind of influenced their memories with the later ideas that came to be bestowed upon the Steppe der Romane. All right, I mean, memory is a very interesting phenomenon, in the sense that usually, like, it's not passive, it's an active thing, memory, and you remember things by putting it into narratives, let's put it that way. So this particular memory of those very, very old days, it can be tainted by later memories that embolden this idea, like, oh yeah, it's a revolutionary song, and it obviously it was forbidden. But I'm quite sure that in that era there is reason enough to assume it was indeed a hidden song like that. It was marginalized.
Yeah, I was thinking about what you were saying at the beginning of the interview, that in a way people assumed, and I include myself in this category, people assumed that the song was forbidden. But I think it, and then you found out through your research that it depends what part of communism you're talking, what part of the communist era you're talking about.
Indeed.
Because in the 50s, where you had the most brutal wipeout of any kind and de-rooting of any kind of historical, nationalistic, identitary connection. Yeah,
that certainly could
be the case. But what is interesting is what happened afterwards as well, because we're still in a communist time.
Yeah,
especially beginning with the 70s.
And indeed, and of course, and those people of that at that time, they were, I have to say, they were adamant about this, right? Like, I found it quite funny when I read it back, actually. But I know at the moment I was like, oh, I'm doing something completely wrong here. But I was asking someone, an elderly man, about his recollections of the Stadt der Romina, and if he ever sang it maybe in public. What, are you crazy? What's wrong with you? You know, it was forbidden. But he was very, very adamant about it, and I didn't know at the time that actually was a very good point to prove. But but in that era it really coincides with the repression of national identity, of sense of identity at all, because it all had to be communist. But then let's move on a bit later. We know when the politics kind of changed. Usually it's taken that when Ceausescu came to power, but there are some debates that actually Gheorghiu Dej, he kind of started already this nationalistic flavor, or this particular Romanian flavor of communism.
Going back to the roots, basically.
Yes, there was in the 60s a definite movement towards a more nationalistic approach, and I wouldn't say anti-Soviet Union, but yeah, they were kind of taking a stance.
I think one of the main reasons, historically speaking, why that would be the case was the revocation of the Russian tanks and troops.
Yeah, and Romania was the first country to arrange that, actually, of all the Warsaw Pact countries. So yeah, I don't remember the exact date or the exact year, but it was in the 60s, and I think it was quite early actually when this already started. So there was a definite movement, and Ceausescu only emboldened this. Of course, he became known for the nationalistic flavor he put into Romanian communism.
Which is fascinating, because this is something that I do find interesting. I think we're entering a period in which history will be changed. Because if you think about it, if you look at the policy of Ceausescu, and if you look at what he was promoting, at least in the first part of his dictatorship, it starts to look more like national socialism, not communism.
Yes. Especially not with this internationalistic idea.
Exactly.
It changed gradually in more countries, of course. But Romania was a fierce example of it.
Especially through songs like this one, because that's also something that I had as a question. Deșteaptă-te Române is heavily patriotic. Obviously is a call to arms for people, like, from a spiritual perspective, especially, as you mentioned, the enemy is more this idea of protect, like it gives the idea of protection. Protect your own, protect yourselves. There's always somebody that is coming after you, whether it's a physical enemy, like a tank, in that case, a Russian or an Ottoman, or an ideology, an idea of that tries to keep us apart, et cetera, et cetera. So, and of course, depending on the context, it was used for the various aims of whoever intended to do to make the population go either left or right. But in this case, what I find fascinating is the fact that you had a communist party that was fearful of protesting and rebellious thoughts. I mean, that's why they had the secret police. That's why they encouraged all the snitching. And yet you would be promoting such a song, because you didn't find out that it was actually, like, some of the people I remember reading from your thesis, some of the people were saying, oh, we learned this in school.
Yes, yes. And I was at first really, really surprised to find it out. Given from the perspective where I came from, that I thought it was forbidden. And indeed, And there were quite a few that had actually just learned it at school. And this is, yeah, to be traced back to, well, to the late 60s, I think, when this answer first appeared for me, people that grew up in the 60s, late 60s. Yeah, and I was like, how is this possible? This wasn't this revolutionary song or this
cold anathema.
Yeah. But apparently not so. And it was indeed made part of the curriculum. And, well, rightly so, because the one that uses the song defines the enemy in this sense. And, yeah, it was just part of a curriculum of patriotic songs. And most people that grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s even, well, they just learned it as part of... some nationalistic songs that they had to learn. Well, some calling it this stupid communist party songs and, you know, all this. There's a very different perspective on the song that way. And you see, the interesting part is that it also really loses its danger for the regime, right? If they embrace this song as they embraced every patriotic song, sometimes with slightly changed lyrics, like Tricolor, Cunosc de Lume. I think there were some changes in the lyrics there as well. And I'm not sure if in De Stad der Munen there were changes, but, well, given the first stanzas, well...
Which is the most important and the most sung.
Indeed, in every song those are the most important. I think I found this funny, by the way, that some people commented on it like, oh yeah, people only knew the first strophe. Like today, it's very much the same in the Netherlands. And I think this counts for every country. Oh yeah. Well, anyway, I found it funny there. But you don't need to change so much. They usually just replaced words like God. And, you know, they didn't want any religion in it, but nationalism, well, yeah. They really embraced it there.
The main message stayed, basically.
Yeah, indeed, it stayed, and it just became part of the government. So the officially sanctified nationalism, and then it's all of a sudden no problem anymore. And most people that I spoke to, they did learn it just at school, just like that. And it's really mind-boggling that then a few decades later, this very song that was part of the official curriculum just became, well, just turned against them, actually.
Exactly my thoughts. Like, that is what I was thinking. It's like, it's interesting how it all backfired on the Communist Party. And not only once, but twice. Because there were two very important moments that we're going to mention in a bit, in 1987 and 1989. But I'm curious how people, so from your interviews, how people felt about the anthem. Because one opinion that you stated, and I still see it today, in some young people, which I'm like, you were born far after communism fell, so calling it a stupid communist song is, obviously that opinion comes from somewhere.
Yes, and maybe it comes from parents that have learned it at school, so that's, that might be a very illogical explanation for that. And it was usurped, you could say, by the government. So yeah, and then in itself, the song gets a different meaning.
Did people experience different, or did you notice different feelings that were aroused by the song in your different interviewees?
Yes, especially the older interviewees. They had this, they viewed it more like this narrative of, oh, this is the patriotic fighting song, it is the song of the revolution, it's very potent and strong. And at the other hand, diving into their memories, they viewed it in a nostalgic way. As I said, remembering the old ways during the very first years of communism in Romania. Later interviewees, they didn't think much of it, or it was indeed part of the communist songs. So just one of those. And then obviously, I should say, everyone who you ask about the Stadt der Ramona, at first they come from the now dominant importance of the song as the song of the revolution of 1989. So... But only when you dive deeper, there are different feelings about it, mixed feelings, I'd say.
Definitely. I mean, in a way, I can understand people's opinion about it, like classifying it as a stupid communist song, because the difference in perception versus reality in what the communists were trying to portray versus what people actually had was ridiculous. You're trying to make, you know, to say, yeah, we are a proud people with a rich history by exaggerating facts, making everything into a myth. I mean, Romania is rich enough. I don't think we need extra embellishing, to be very honest. I mean, people can just listen to the history of the national anthems and they can get a sense of the drama and the storytelling that is and the narratives that have been playing a part in creating and shaping Romania. But because of this distance between, well, when you go home, there's only 2 hours of electricity and we are kind of freezing inside our very small cubicle apartments. Yet we need to sing something so uplifting and that doesn't resonate with us.
Yes. It's part of the instrumentarium of the government to try and mold the people. But yeah, obviously that's not going to work if it's not aligned with the reality. And yeah, it's a very specific phenomenon for, I could even say, probably every dictatorship. There's usually just a huge discrepancy between the reality and, well, whatever they want to portray. And yeah, the Statuta Romana, right, fell into that category.
Did you find any funny or interesting stories that you did not expect around
I wanted to add one story that had just popped up now, speaking about all this ideology into the songs and all. One of my interviewees said, like, okay, well, if you were smart, you had Hungarian music. So it was all the same communist crap, but you couldn't understand it. So it was better. That's a way to kind of get out of it, indeed.
At least it has a beat to it.
Yes, and it probably has the very same subject, but hey, I don't understand it anymore. That's great. But yeah, you will find ways to get rid of all this imposed meaning. And yeah, you will find it in different ways, I guess.
It is interesting because it made me think of also the musical aspect of the song that we didn't touch upon, but it's quite interesting because I know that you also wrote about it. The song itself is not the easiest to remember. And you mentioned it as well. And yet it is the song that kind of stuck with the Romanian people.
Yeah. But I guess also, especially when you learn music, or you learn to sing music when you're young, you don't pay too much attention to the words. You're just remembering the melody and trying to, well, to sing as good as possible like that. It's the words, I think you forget the first, but the melody stays, the melody sticks. I think that's a big part of it. And then when at some random occasion someone starts to sing it, it can easily come back like that.
Which is interesting because now we are moving into, I want us to move into the events of the later stage.
Yeah,
the
I
later
was stages that as well.
of the communist era in Romania. Because interestingly enough, from a musical perspective, the atmosphere fit really well. Because the original song, as I said, the one, at least the one that Mr. Vasile Oltean identified, the church song, was something that people sang at funerals. It is sung in a minor key. So it does have that kind of melancholic, deeply emotional allure to it. And of course, when we're talking about the protests and the revolutions, the revolts that have happened, the two notable ones being the 1987 revolt of the factory workers in Brasov, and then, of course, what everybody knows in 1989, revolt started in Timișoara, in the western side of the country, and then continuing in Bucharest, where in all of these instances, Deșteaptă-te Române was sung by the people. And it did carry that solemn note true to the original song. So what happened? What do you know happened, and what did people comment about these events and about the link between these events and the song?
Yeah, it's generally held indeed that someone, and no one knows who did it, who started to sing at the Brasov revolt in 87. But someone started it. Someone started to sing in the Stadt der Romane, and then other people followed
on the streets.
Of course. On the streets when they were marching towards the party headquarters, I think, and of course accompanied by shouts like "We want bread, we want money, whatever." It was a general protest atmosphere, I suppose. And then, yeah, the singing started. But this, well, how could this all of a sudden have a meaning? Why would someone think like, "Hey, let's sing a song"?
And let's sing that song.
And they sing that song. And I think there must be some, because, yeah, it was at that time apparently just part of the school system even. But there must have been some connection maybe to revolution. And one thing I was really surprised to find out as well, and one of my interviewees told me about this, was a film that was screened and also just on the National Television in 1980 by Mircea Moldovan, just the director. I think this was a film about the 1848 revolution, and of course this was very well possible. It's part of the national myth, right? Yeah, the uniting of all Romanians,
the revolutionaries that were marching for their rights.
Yes, exactly. And at that and in that film, there was a scene where people were protesting and where actually a choral version of the Stadt der Romane was played. So the context had been given in that way, but you never know, like, how many people would make that connection. But what is clear, I think, that this song has subversive meaning. It's shown through that specific screening. The name of the film, by the way, I should mention, La Răscrucerea Marilor Futuni, at the crossroads of great storms, as they translated it.
That's a very interesting setting of the scene.
Yeah, right, indeed. Again, this is again such an interesting connection, an interesting bridge between things.
A little bit of foreshadowing for what was about to come.
But at least what is known from the Brasov revolt. So someone started singing, and I think it could also very well be possible that because of it was sung, and because of these, well, of course, after the revolts, there were lots of arrests and people were sent all over the country, apart from their families and all, as a punishment. But of course, there were stories about what happened, and there were stories about people singing the Stadt der Romane in that revolt. So this, maybe it just, that was just enough to make it a kind of a symbol or a kind of subconscious thing that's people started to think, oh, right, indeed, this song has some subversive meaning, or this, well, they wouldn't think that, but at least they would think this song could mean something very different. It could mean fighting against a very different enemy, and that enemy was then the state, of course. Then in Timișoara, 2 years later, was sung again, and that was where, there was bloodshed, of course, as we know, from that very day. I don't know how many people were shot, actually, but there was the connection between sacrifice, like people have sacrificed themselves in this revolt, and this, and there was the singing of the Stadt der Romane again. So this makes this emboldens it. This makes it a more of a strong myth to cling onto. And I think that was where a new meaning was carved out for the Stadt der Romane, in the sense of revolution against the communist authorities.
That's a very good point, because the bloodshed that happened, and especially since we're talking about students or young people at the prime of their life, just starting off. And as far as I know, we don't even know up until today the amount of people that were shot. We don't know what happened to their bodies exactly, because that was also not really reported, and there's a lot of historical documents that have not been declassified yet. So we live in a perpetual myth up until this point regarding the historical facts around what happened in Timișoara. But at the same time, it made it real. This was not compared to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, the kids were learning this patriotic, odd-sounding song in school. Now the lyrics took up form in the most unfortunate way possible.
And what I want to comment here is I could even say, like, the facts surrounding Timișoara, they don't really matter. It's what matters is what people heard about this event. And at that time, the estimates of the deaths were insane, like 10,000. Like 10,000 people killed. Those were the stories around that time. And that's potent. That's so strong. And people at that time, well, this was your only information. You believed it. And also, yeah, the connection between those different things, like the singing, you've seen it done. And, well, you can repeat it. And I think this is indeed a mystifying, especially at those very in those very days. It makes it a little more strong.
Correct. And indeed, in the end, people believe stories. What happened factually is something. I mean, that's why I said we're entering a stage in world history in which we're going to have a lot more information at our hand. We're going to read many more books that we have never heard of before. We're going to talk to other people, and like you have, you know, with your interviews, what was thought of as something that was completely forbidden, like this hidden fruit that just sprung out in a spontaneous movement and became a symbol, was actually something that people, again, were having. Like, yes, there was a phase in which that has happened, but that's not the full story. So we're going to indeed get more perspective and even change our minds completely about things that we were holding true up until this point. And that's only something that, you know, it happens in science, it happens in history, it happens all over time because that's how we evolve. But it's fascinating to take a look at the entire roadmap of the song.
Yes, indeed. And how it interacts with, the historical changes in Romania. That's
as well. And also how it connected or not with the people.
Yeah. But I also think it's very interesting how loose the meaning is in that sense. Like that's something that really stuck with me. That's the meaning of this song. It's not inherent, and it can be changed anytime.
And adapted.
Yeah, and adapted indeed for your own means. That's very true. And when you think of it, it happens everywhere. It happens with a lot of more things than just national hymns.
No, that is definitely true. And in a way, again, one of these spontaneous thoughts that I'm having is that the adaptability, the flexibility of the meaning of the song really reflects in a way the nature of the Romanian people themselves. Because as there was a joke, I think, running on the internet with Romania had to be the most adaptable because we basically lived through all major ideological trends in the last 100 years, like on turbo speed. So, I mean, you know, we had the monarchy, we had like communism, we had a little bit of fascism here and there, we had, then we tried democracy, and now we're going through God knows what. So we needed to be flexible and adaptable. And in a way, the Romanian people have always proven that this is something that it's a skill that they hone. So it's fascinating to see that reflected in the current national anthem.
Yeah, and in a way, it's very apt. You could say that, yeah. And it's like a boomerang, it just came around. And oh, it struck again at some pivotal point in Romanian history.
And something that I wanted to ask you is that, especially after 1989, so you had the big historical moment of the fall of communism, there was a strong postmodern deconstructionist movement that overtook Romania and, well, in general, the world. But we also had it present in Romania. And this movement started hitting basically important identity markers for Romanians, like deconstructing absolutely anything that could be deconstructed, from history to national values. And inevitably, the national anthem also got caught into this discussion. So we even had some mainstream intellectual figures like Andrei Pleșu, who is part of the Romanian Academy. So he is, you know, in this, the most... The, prestigious institution, academic institution in Romania, who was saying that, well, this is just a blasé song that's anachronical and it doesn't have meaning anymore. We're talking about death three times in the first stanza. Like, what is up with us? And in a way, there are people who feel removed from the meaning of the anthems. And I wanted to ask, what do you think personally about this current, and if it has impacted your own research and your own perception of the Romanian national anthem?
First, there comes a random thought, because national anthems, well, I think in every country they are disputed. But maybe the fact that in Romania they changed so much leaves space to, well, it has been changed in the past, so why not change it again? It paves the way for those voices. So yeah, maybe that's, Romania was quite late, I think, with a national anthem compared to other European countries. There have been discussions here in the Netherlands as well, if we should keep the anthem. No one knows what we're talking about. And it's a national myth, of course. Yeah.
I mean, in the Netherlands, I always laugh at the lyrics with "We are of German blood and we pay our allegiance to the King of Spain" or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah,
It's because it's about a historical figure.
And it was written in a very specific historical context, but it's always...
Yeah, and no one gets it. Maybe that's a better place for him to be, because no one gets it anyway, and it's been like that. It's always been like that, so let's just keep it, you know. But whereas when you change the national hymns so often, yeah, oh, why not change it? I think this gives wing to those people wanting that. But yeah, do I think it's what I found particularly interesting about the Ștatea Română as a national anthem is that it's even from the crudest perspective, from now, it's just like, does Romania define itself as a non-communist country and that's it? Well, not. Because it's so closely tied in popular memory, in memory of the people, that it's connected to the revolution. Yeah, at a certain point, this loses its importance. It doesn't lose its importance in a historical sense, but in a few generations, people, well, okay, it's just one of those whims of history. And why do we have a national hymn that's connected to that? And on the other hand, yeah, it has, as I have found out, it has had an interesting trajectory with some important roles, some central meanings at different points in Romanian history. So you could argue from both sides what to do with it. But I don't know about national anthems in general. Maybe I'm a bit of a deconstructivist, but
oh, you are with the times.
Yes, indeed.
But Matthias, we need to build as well. We can't just like tear everything apart.
No, well, yeah, I had to tear it apart for the very thesis, you know, lose all the meaning it has and get to the core of it. But on the other hand, it does indeed reflect Romanian history more than any other song I can think of right now. That's to say, for the Ștatea Română as a national hymn, I'd say. But this is one of the things I didn't really think about when doing my research. It was not one of those things like that really interested me or were part of the question anyway. People would comment on it, of course. When you talk with people about such a subject, they will comment about it. And some think it's aggressive, patriotic, and so we shouldn't have such a song as a national hymn because it's not appropriate right now. And yeah, when viewed in different light, it can take on whole different meanings and nasty meanings too. Like for instance, with minorities and there are issues with minorities, obviously. So there are so many pros and cons, and from an outside perspective, I really can't weigh them properly against each other.
No, because in the end, it is the decision of the people what they want to do with their identity and their how they want to develop in the end.
That's true, and it is indeed an identity thing. And if it's and then you should say if it's not appropriate anymore, it doesn't reflect our identity anymore. Yeah, then why not leave it?
It is an interesting debate, and one reason why I really appreciated your work and your thesis and all the comments that you brought through it is it really makes you want to know more. It really recommends this idea of when you want to talk about something, when you want to get into these personally important topics, because in the end, the national anthem should have some kind of connection to you as a person, right? If you're pertaining to this group. My recommendation, and this is something that I appreciated from your work, is do it in a way that it's not superficial. Don't just leave it at whatever impression that you might have, because there might be things underneath it that might make it, you know, that might drive your opinion in a certain direction, certain elements that are important to give it the fuller picture. And then you can, you know, have a say or have a better understanding at least of what you're talking about or what you're referring to.
Yes. If there is a larger understanding of this very song, yeah, it would also influence, of course, how people think about it and not just dismiss it as a stupid communist song or something really different. That's true, and all the while it is indeed if it's of no importance for too many people, yeah, then you can ask why have it.
Correct.
It's part of the pantheon, the national pantheon like that. And
exactly. It's something that people need to, if they want to have a better grasp of their national identity, it's good to really look for things a bit more in depth.
Yes, certainly. And not so much at the surface level.
No. That usually doesn't really help. I did want to ask you, what is the most relevant lesson that you got on a personal level from the research venture that you undertook? Because we did talk about the anthem, we did talk about the Romanian people, but what did you get out of it for yourself?
Oh, yeah, that's a big question, actually, in the sense that there are many things that I could take from it. As I said before, it's also the very question relating to meaning of things I found really interesting. But on a personal level, for me it was probably the best development of my own Romanian. Unfortunately, it has been fallen off since, because I haven't spoken much Romanian for some 4 years, I think. It's been a while, but back then I was just diving into the void and like, okay, I'm going to do a full hour interview in Romanian, and my Romanian, I'm not so sure if it's good enough. And I had to transcribe all that. So yeah, this was talking about personal development. Yes, obviously this did a lot. But also what I found is some answer that I really got, I think. Obviously, history as a field of studies is so much focused on the ground narratives and on academic texts and all this, and I found it way more interesting to ask the people to get a social context to things, because it means a lot more actually than. I've never been a historian that was not like this big database of facts. I've never got this, but this was just not something that really felt right, or I just couldn't do it anyway. But getting to know different people and to hear their stories is just really interesting. And all these sample points give you an overview that I don't think you can get it from just sampling facts like that. And yes, on a personal level, just diving into such a subject that, because it really resonated with me from the very start, I still really feel that I've grown a lot through it, through this whole project.
That's really sweet. That's really nice to hear. But yeah, I can imagine.
Yes.
Can you imagine the situations?
you're on the other side of like I told you before.
Oh, definitely. I mean, from my perspective, it was always fun. Since I studied Dutch language and literature in, for example, in Belgium with the natives, and I had to listen to the stories of people who are speaking, I don't know what dialect in Henk, like the mining cities. And I had to transcribe everything. And I was just so confused if I could do it. But it is an empowering experience in the end, if you push through.
Yes, indeed. And you ask yourself, oh, can I never do this? But let's just go head first into it and see what happens. And that worked out well. But also, yeah, I think because it really was a bit of a passion like that. So that's, and yeah, I don't, I think in that sense, it was a big experience. Just diving into it. And also just how this whole perspective is a very interesting thing, because for me it also just I did one interview, and then all of a sudden my ideas I held, they were just smacked, and I had to take a very different angle at things. And then I had another interview, and things just completely, well, they like everything, like, I mean, every interview just gave a different angle, and sometimes it just, well, it completely wiped away all the expectations I had, and I had to really find out how does it really work.
Oh, you mean to adapt?
To adapt, indeed. To adapt.
I see, like some Romanian is rubbed off on you.
Yes, that must be. That must be the reason, indeed.
Personal development done right. And my last question is, on this 1st of December, what message do you have for the Romanian people?
Whew. Yes, this is also a bit of a big question, I guess. Well, if Romanians keep doing themselves like that, it will be adaptation.
Among many other
things. And that's, well, it's speaking of this trade, it is very apt for these times, actually. Adaptations, we need more than anything else at this point in history. So let's keep it at that. Keep this national idea of this national spirit of adaptability. I think this will get you anywhere. I mean, just remaining conservative and stagnant and all this, it doesn't work anymore. You better be adaptable.
You can either land in jail or or on the throne. It depends how you use your experience.
I mean, it's more like, now I come to think of it, this rings personally with me as well. So I really like this idea of adaptability in the Romanian consciousness. And I didn't hear it before, actually. It's just, you mentioned it. But yeah, when you're too focused on all kinds of goals and things, when the situation changes, you might just be swept away. But when you're adaptable, when you keep a certain distance between you and your goals and not get too attached to it, you can adapt, and you can, especially in I'm looking for the Crossroad of Great Storms reference, but I can't fit it in here. But in these stormy times, you need to be able to be flexible and adaptable. And I really liked it as a national, as a national mythical spirit.
It does fit. Well, Matthias, thank you so much for this interview and this conversation.
Thanks for having me. And indeed, it was an interesting conversation, yes.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Wonders episode. And thanks again to Matthias for his generous knowledge exchange about Romania's special hymn. This time of the year is truly special for us, not only because we are celebrating the main topic of the podcast, aka Romania, but also because this little project is officially turning two. I personally want to thank each and every one of you for joining in the wonder and helping to create this one-of-a-kind, heart-to-microphone sharing experience. As we continue to learn the ins and outs of this podcasting baby, We promise to bring you more beautiful, interesting, and audio-worthy stories to your ears that will make you want to know more about Romania and its quirky people. Don't forget to share this podcast around, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, there's always goodies there, and get ready for more to come your way from Wonders. Mulțumesc and la revedere!